What? She's already choking. It's not.
I remember when we were young, driving in your car, speeding so fast, I felt like we were drunk. City lights laid out before us. And your arm felt nice around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged. I had a feeling I could be someone, be someone, be someone.
When I was a kid, I used to make my mom play that album incessantly over and over again.
It's the right thing to do. Okay, so here I am. And there you are. That sounds like it could be another song lyric.
I was like, is that, are we going into another song?
I love to use, this should give you a sense of where my self-care is at. I like to use our time to do Kate's cultural appropriation skincare routine, which I have a new YouTube channel about. You can learn all about how the papery skinned Polack Irish woman steals ancient techniques. I got nothing. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. It's been a hot minute.
I know. When was it? Months and months ago, or is it like a year? Are we at the year mark?
I don't know that we're at the year mark. Hold on, let me look. Let me look. So the last time we recorded was, or I guess the last time we published was on the 31st of December, 2021.
Okay, so I had given birth.
Yes, you had given birth. It's true. There was a small child in the world.
You know, since then, I've learned a lot. Can I share?
Yeah. What have we learned in the past 6 months?
This is what I learned. I learned that postpartum depression does not always come on instantly. And I knew that, I think, intellectually, but not, I didn't like embody it, because, you know, December, January, February, March, I was struggling, but like managing.
Yeah.
And then sometime March, April, May, I took this nosedive emotionally and in my mood that was otherworldly. And I've struggled with depression my whole life, really, and yeah. I'm quite familiar with it. And but this was new. I had never, the way I describe it is that all of a sudden it felt like my brain broke and every minor inconvenience, every tiny little frustration, my brain was like, it's okay. You can just kill yourself. Mm-hmm. We should do a trigger warning for this. But, and that was like, and then I would hear my brain say that and I would say, what the fuck? No, you don't. You have a beautiful garden. You got cool kids. Your husband's a fox.
As we know that this is not a visual media that we exist in, but this would be a time at which I would flash a picture of Evan up on the screen if I could.
I did something good. This is, it's karma. He's amazing. And I have a life that is really beautiful that I'm grateful for. And it was a long time creating it and wasn't easy. And I really don't want to end my life. And I didn't then, but my brain was saying at every corner, it's all right. You can just, and it had like, and it was terrifying. So I reached out, and I encourage, if you ever experience something like this. I hope you don't, but if you do, just reach out immediately because it's a symptom. It's not those words that your brain is saying can be scary, but they are just a symptom of something going on in your brain, that it's like short wiring, it's inflamed, it's a symptom. And so I told my doctors, and I was like, is this still considered postpartum? You know, I'm like 6 months out or whatever. And they were very much like, yeah. And I started doing some research, and it turns out the highest probability time after giving birth to experience severe treatment resistant postpartum depression is between month 6 and 9, which also, I think the chances of someone committing suicide successfully are highest months 9 to 12 after giving birth. And that's because that's when support starts to fade away.
Sure.
Thing one. Thing two, hormonally, that your body is going through Olympic level changes. Most of which happen, you know, if you think of it this way, condensing all of adolescence into a few months. Yeah. And so if you have, you know, any history of anxiety or depression, that puts you in a greater risk category. Multiple births, greater risk category. The older you are, greater risk category. I basically checked every fucking box. So as soon as it happened, I knew it. It's like the difference between like, have you had an orgasm or have you not? You're like, I think I have. You're like, you haven't. You haven't. Postpartum depression is like, I was like, oh, yeah, that's it. Now, here's the cool thing. The FDA just rushed into approval a medication called brexanolone, which is not an antidepressant. It's more akin to like a steroid. And it had outrageously good results for treatment-resistant, pretty severe postpartum depression. So much so that the FDA rushed it through. And I'm one of the first 30 people in Rhode Island. In Rhode Island.
Okay.
Who have received it. But keep this in mind. There aren't that many places that administer it. I just happen to be, it's not even in Boston. People from Boston have to come to Rhode Island. It's not widely available yet. And I read a really shitty article in the New York Times that was like, oh, good, entitled White Ladies with Good Insurance Will Have Access to It. And I'm like, yeah, that is a problem. I want more people to have access to it. But I almost didn't get it because I felt shame about the fact that I had access to it.
Oh, wow. That's.
Yeah, I don't want to unpack that right now, but that's a thing. And like, I strive to understand my privilege. I do. And also, I don't tick every privileged box, but the vitriol with which that article was written, it really just, anyways, it almost prevented me from getting it. And here's how the treatment works. You go into the hospital for 3 days and they plug you up to an IV bag full of the meds and you just sit there. And you get the meds, mm-hmm. and you get a little sleepy, and you know, the baby can come with you. Somebody has to be with you in case you like fall asleep or something happens, you know, for insurance reasons. But I was there with my baby, and I felt most people feel change within hours. I didn't feel anything. I stuck with it all 3 days, didn't feel anything. And then I went home and had the worst day of it all. I was like, I just did that. I just put this stress on my support system for 3 days and I don't feel better.
Yeah.
And I was devastated. And then the next day I woke up and without exaggeration, it felt like a switch was turned on in my brain and I felt like myself. Mm-hmm. And it was that abrupt. And it wasn't like all of a sudden I was shooting rainbows out of my ass. It was like all of a sudden I was just normal depressed. You know what I mean? I was like, oh, and that was like euphoric to just feel normal depressed. I felt like, you know, I went from having those like really troubling intrusive thoughts like 5-6 times a day to like having days where I didn't have any.
Yeah.
And then having a day where I had like one or two, and then days where I didn't have any. And the other thing that has been really complicated about this is the thing that myself, I can only speak for myself, but I know a lot of other people struggle with, is when you come out of something like this, you need time to heal. When you come out of childbirth, when you come out of a treatment like that, you need time to heal. And we don't have that in this country.
Yeah.
And I have had to, like, you know, go back, and I love my work. I love my employers. Everybody's been really understanding. But I know that when I have additional stressors, it increases the symptoms. It's just, and, you know, we live in a culture that so shames people for taking rest and for taking time. Like, there's always like a suspicion about medical conditions. And a lot of this is internalized. Like,
oh, much of it is internalized. Like,
yeah, I like hear my dad's voice saying like, you know, get the stink blown off you. You're going to be fine. Toughen up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like that really could have, that compromised my life.
Yeah.
If I had just pressed it down and said, no, there's nothing wrong with me. I'm just being lazy. I'm just a lazy mom. I am, you know, I just suck at this. Then I could have been in real trouble. And yeah. I know that the main thing that prevented me from getting help sooner was being scared financially and feeling shame mm-hmm. about needing yet another
yeah
thing. And to tie it into the yoga world, which I will do, is I felt,
I just imagine someone tuning in and this being the first episode.
Yeah, welcome. You know, my first thing is like, I cannot teach. I cannot show up right now to teach.
Yeah.
Because it, like, the anxiety it gives me and the feeling of imposter syndrome, and also like, I'm at the point now where when I think about teaching, I just feel like I'm showing up for people who may or may not have compassion for disabilities, or, you know, it just feels like I just cannot put on the fake smile. I cannot be understanding to students who are not understanding. And I think maybe I'm talking more about teacher training stuff. I just realized I'm not talking about teaching like a regular weekly class. Those people are wonderful. But like going into a teacher training and reminding people that are going to be yoga teachers that you're allowed to teach yoga if you're disabled.
Yeah.
And that's like a shocking moment in every teacher training.
I mean, to me, that fear extends into a regular classroom setting too, that there is this very interesting dynamic of showing up to teach folks who like on a political level might not have your back.
Oh. Right?
And it was and most of the time when I'm showing up to teach online, it's like people that I know really well. It's like just people from Bow Street showing up on Tuesday nights or Sunday mornings when I subbed for Fez. Like, so that's not an issue, but I went to Berkeley has this like 5-week thing in the summer that like high school and like some college students too who are interested in going to Berkeley come to like get a taste of it. And so I just teach like a couple of classes on Saturday during the weeks that's happening. The first one was this weekend, and it was the first time I'd like been in a classroom with people who like don't, like nobody knew me. Like it'd been so long since I'd been in front of a classroom where like I was starting from square one. And the first class was fine. Second class, there were a lot of people, and there were two of the most like stereotypical, like obnoxious high school boys in the class. And they were just, I mean, it has been a really long, like probably since Back Bay, since I've had people be like that disruptive in the middle of a class. But what was hilarious to me, because the whole time I'm teaching and I'm just like, the rage is like seething underneath. And I'm like holding it together. And like, cause I could tell, it was so funny. It was like, I had people set up in two rows facing each other as I am wont to do. So it was like this side of the room was like obnoxious humans. And this side of the room was like really trying to like chill and like practice. Cause there were definitely some people who had practiced a lot of yoga before, which is really cool when you're in a room full of like 16 to 18 year olds. And it's clear that people have like
exposure
and experience.
Oh God, I'm sorry. Can we just talk for a second? They're 16 to 18.
Yeah. So anyways, so I get through the class and we're in Shavasana and I just notice all of a sudden the room is like actually like fully quiet for a second. And I look over and I'm like, oh, those assholes are sound asleep right now. They're sound asleep. And so like I ring the bell at the end of class, everyone comes up to seated. They're still sound asleep. They do not wake up until like almost everyone has already left. And I had to like give them a little kick because there was another class coming. It was just like, and maybe be like, I don't know if I'm cut out to teach public classes ever.
So when they were being disruptive, what were they doing?
Just like chatting and giggling and like purposefully pretending that they didn't know what to do. And like making jokes. And I just have to be like, hey, quiet down. Like it had just been so long since I had to deal with anything like that. It was just really funny, like the rage contrasted, because clearly like other people in the room were pissed about it too. And so like when everyone came out of Shavasana, like everyone just had like a good chuckle quietly to themselves and just quietly left the room.
Yeah, that's kind of beautiful.
Yeah.
Those fucking tricks. I'm so done. No, and you know what? They're gonna like grow up and be fucking lawyers and
yes. But I
and
but I do, I don't know, my past 6 months has just been I'm just sitting with a lot of like I don't know what this is supposed to look like anymore.
Mm-mm.
I really don't. And I don't know what it's supposed to look like in the world of Buddhism. I don't know what it's supposed to look like in the world of Hatha Yoga. I don't know what it's supposed to look like from a like organizational and structural standpoint. you know, I have clear ideas about what I think is harmful and what I think doesn't work, but like, I just don't know anymore. And so there's this part of me that's like, oh, well, I got to do it all myself again. We haven't done this in so long. We're having technical difficulties.
What was I saying? Cannot hold.
What was I saying?
Oh, just like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Oh, you were like, oh, I have to do it myself again.
Yes. Which is really not a good, place to be. I mean, it's not a bad place, but it's not, I also feel like I very much underestimate the, the need to I don't know, there's the exhaustion of the pandemic, there's the sort of weight of the uncertainty of you know, where your paycheck is coming from, and you know, what this thing that I find to be really valuable and want to be able to share with folks, you know, where this, I guess the lack of congruence between the quote unquote industry and what I find to be valuable about practice. And then also the truth that, and it, I like, so my teacher actually had to like point this out to me the other week and be like, and you're transitioning, like, and you're on, you know, like, and there is, yes, the, a lot of focus on, you know, hormones and this and that. And by the way, just given the political environment, I'm getting all of the therapist's letters for anything that I ever would want or could want to have done, just in case shit goes south, just so that I have all of those letters complete and done. But like, there is also, there's also a healing process there that takes time and that takes, that takes time, and you know, it's hard to have to be like, to have this sort of conflicting, like, oh, like, so-and-so needs, you know, is going out of town, should I sub their class? Well, there's the voice in me that's like, well, you enjoy teaching and you need money, so you should sub their class. And then there's the part of me that's like, oh, but you actually really need time. And that's just not something that, you know, it's not something that I have, and it's also not something that, you know, I think part of that time involves kind of just time off to like be a human in the world and not have to worry about work. And then another part of that time, for me anyway, I really feel like would benefit from a, you know, a retreat type environment. And there's so much fucking gatekeeping around these retreat environments. Like, oh, you're not, you haven't done enough of these retreats, you haven't done enough of those retreats, or you've only done retreats in this tradition, so we don't think you'd really be able to handle coming here. And I'm like, we're just sitting quietly and watching our breath. What what could I not handle?
That makes me want to like set those buildings on fire.
Yeah.
That's
right. And I get that some of it is a little bit of, there is a natural, not natural, there has been a movement to like make sure that people that are coming to the center for any, for these centers to for any sort of like solitary or intensive period of practice, that there is a mental health check, because, you know, I think that's a really good thing that a lot of these centers have tried to implement over the course of the past 5 or 6 years. But I also am just like, I don't know that we're at a point where we can really be so insular about all of this. Like, I do still think that there are, like, you know, I don't want necessarily someone who's never meditated before to go on a 10-day silent meditation retreat. Like, I think that might be fine for some people, but it's probably not the wisest decision. And like, there's nowhere where you can go and like just practice without having to get involved in all sorts of like community bullshit and the Buddhist side of things, or, you know, territorial industry bullshit on the hatha yoga side of things. Like, I don't know that I can, without significant consideration of what I'm stepping into, take class at studios in Boston anymore. I mean, online, sure, whatever. If I really want to take a class online, that's fine, because I'm just in my own space. But to like step into a studio, like, there always has to be some consideration of like, okay, well, what is this teacher going to read into me being in their class? What is this studio owner going to read into me being in their class? What is this being in a class at their studio? It's just, I don't know, it just feels so removed from even what was going on at Back Bay, which was like a big operation, right? Like, it's not like that was some sort of small hole in the wall scenario, but everything even feels like exponentially removed and scaled up and you know, so much more of a, I don't know what the word is. And I think you lose a lot of, I think there are a lot of practitioners that these studios lose because of that. Like, people who are just like, I'm just gonna go practice at home. Like, bye. which is totally fine, like, great. I also think there's a lot of teachers who like are really quality teachers who step out because they just don't want to deal, and don't want to play the game. And I struggle with that too. Like, there are times where I'm like, I'm just going to go bye. And then I'm like, that doesn't feel quite right. It doesn't feel quite right.
I just feel so much of what you said. I recognize as true.
I mean, could you imagine if you and I just like showed up in a class somewhere in Boston? I feel like people would look at us like so side-eyed.
I know. Yeah, there's that. And then if they didn't know us.
Yeah.
All the fucked up things they'd be thinking if they saw us.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's like honestly, like I'm not crazy. I have, and this is what it is. My truth right now, which people always use to preface something shitty they're about to say.
Absolutely, yep.
My truth right now. No, honestly, I just don't want to take a public class. I can't think of. There's like a handful of people that are friends of mine that teach that I would roll into their class.
Yeah.
But like beyond that, I'm so distrustful for good reason of like general population yoga teachers, because I'm either going to be harmed or I'm going to be harmed with my, or the boredom is going to hurt.
Say more about that.
I mean, I just like how many, I, you know what I don't want to do? I don't want to go to a junior high poetry slam.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Fair. Like, yeah.
I don't want to go. I don't want to see you learn. I don't want to watch someone figure out that it's time to rest.
Yeah.
And I want platitudes from anyone in their 20s. Honestly, if you're in your 20s and you're teaching yoga, if you have something really traumatic that happened to you, I'll come to your class. I'm interested. But if you haven't, I don't want to. No.
Yeah.
Show me your fucking able-bodied lunge. Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, come over and fix my downward dog. Try it. Oh, because I'm not in it. Oh, push my hips down. No. I will punch you in your fucking well-groomed vagina. I don't want to take your class. I don't want to take your class. And you don't want me in your class. True. You know, I just, and this is coming from a place of genuine, I'm waving the white flag in a lot of ways. I can't teach right now because I need to take care of myself, and I just physically, emotionally, mentally, it's not healthy for me to teach yoga right now. That will not always be the case.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
The other side of it is it's really hard for me to care about the machinations of the yoga industry when we live in Gilead. I don't care. And unless the people that are part of that community, unless full-time yoga teachers like start speaking up and taking action on things like this and advocating for you know, the rights of their friends, I don't know what you're doing. Like, because it, to me, it really is, if you're teaching yoga, you need to be aware of the environment in which you are instructing. And I think teachers in general are too terrified to talk about it. And yeah. I can't endure it any. I can't walk in if, you know, like I, oh, you know, and by the way, side note, I went the worst class I had that reminded me of the one you had with those fellas in the back room is I had somebody, it was back at Sassy. And two girls came in late, rolled up their mats in the back of the room, and one was on her phone taking selfies of herself laying down.
Naturally.
Just, yeah, actually, this was happening. And then she was talking like at this volume with her friend. And it was like a morning class. It was like 12 of us. And I was like, I literally said in front of the whole class, I was like, you can go. I'm like, no, it's okay. Don't feel awkward. You can leave.
Yeah.
And she was like, what? And I was like, you don't want to be here. I don't really want you here. It's okay. And like, she stuck around to talk to me afterwards. And I was like, and then she like sent an inflammatory email. And I was like, no, not today, Satan.
But I think it's, you know, that I feel like there's been, I think you're pointing to the right thing. Cause I've been hearing a lot of dialogue about like whether, like to what degree politics should be enmeshed in yoga. And a lot of it ends up being around like diversity, equity, inclusion mm-hmm. trainings. And like, do I think that every yoga teacher should be required to take Yoga Alliance's specific DEI training? No, I don't think Yoga Alliance should be trusted to do that type
anything,
of
anything really.
Anything really, let alone that type of work. Would I hope that all yoga teachers would be interested in learning in whatever way they have available to them, you know? Yes, I would hope that. I know that I don't know that that's something you can really require, but I would hope that that would be the case. And I think some of those conversations about whether, you know, to what degree politics and yoga intersect, when it comes to like actually teaching the people in front of you, like meaning comes in context. Like there are a group of people walking into a room, and I don't know, maybe Roe v. Wade just got overturned and people are feeling some shit.
I don't know.
just a hypothetical. I don't know that you can really couch that in some sort of neutrality. And if you are couching it in some sort of neutrality, it's probably out of some sort of fear that like someone in the room doesn't agree with you. But like, you know, I feel like it's the same people who sometimes talk about how they don't want politics in yoga are the same people who are like, well, can't we like agree to disagree? And like, yeah, I mean, on certain things we can. And, you know, I think it is, I mean, you don't have to spend 30 minutes of your hour-long class talking about the events of the day, but you do have to find some way to acknowledge to the room that like you are at least aware of the context and there to like hold the space for people to have whatever experience they need to have that day. And you know, different people are going to have different ways of doing that. And yeah, some people might get really fucking aggravated and agitated, but they can just go to a different class at the end of the day. But it's just, it's one thing when there's just the normal, like, with like, I feel like 10 years ago there was just normal everyday political drama, which was like annoying and it sucked, and like maybe you didn't have like maybe it wasn't in everybody's mindset when they stepped into a yoga classroom. We're way fucking past that.
We are. Yeah.
Like every week there's a hearing or a court case or a and again, you don't have to. You can find your own creative way to acknowledge what's going on for folks. But you have to acknowledge what's going on for folks. Otherwise, like, you really are just teaching them how to do a lunge. And, like, I don't.
But here's the thing. On average, What's a fucking 20-year-old gonna say in the front of a class? I'm being so judgmental and ageist right now. This really isn't about age. There are exceptions.
I think it's there. You can acknowledge it without unpacking.
That's true.
The details, like, you know, even to say that, like, I think even if you are a 20-year-old, you could, you know, Roe v. Wade gets overturned, you can walk into the classroom and be like, hey, y'all, what the fuck? Everyone just do what they need to do today. This is the practice that I felt like I needed today, and I'm going to lead you through it. And if you need to, like, skip all of it and lie down, great. If you know, if you want to follow along for the ride, fantastic. Like, let's all take care of each other today. Like, you don't need to have, it doesn't need to be this, like, you don't need to give a history lesson on reproductive rights before you start your asana class.
Yeah.
In order to acknowledge the context in which people are stepping into the room. In order to understand the context in which people are stepping into the room, and to get, and there are all manner of contexts that could be at play for the sort of group dynamic, but then also for, like, individuals. I mean, it's the same thing if someone were to, not the same thing, but, like, if four people come up to you at the beginning of class and say, I blew out my meniscus a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to take that very important piece of context and probably scrap a lot of what you had planned.
Yeah, but are you? Or are you just going to be like, okay, modify?
I mean, okay. I I don't know.
Figure it out.
I don't know.
I think I've gotten to the place where I'm really, it feels like there's fires all around us. And I mean that, like, both in my personal life and in the greater society and culture and local communities. There is a cruelty to not naming what is harming so many people. And it is hard for me to wrap my head around the importance of a vigorous and creative vinyasa flow when so many things are on fire. I don't know. It's not entirely formulated. It is a baby thought. It is still shitting its pants.
Yeah.
But I'm frustrated, bored, angry, and sad all at the same time about where my relationship with quote unquote the yoga community. I just think I've lost steam.
Yeah.
You know, I have my relationship with yoga and with meditation, and that has been put under duress as well. And the toxicity of the, you know, the perpetual optimism of the marketing machine and of individual yoga teachers, it's just, it's at a point where I just can't. And I And the way I feel is something that other groups of people have been dealing with for much longer than me. You know what I mean? Like it, I'm slowly, you know, embarrassingly slowly starting to vaguely understand. Like, it's so unfair that Black and Brown people are tasked often with the education, you know, of well-meaning but lazy white people about race in this country. And I don't think I honestly, and I know that this is, I'm just coming to terms with the fact that as frustrated as I am about having to explain the cruelty of non-inclusive yoga, I haven't had to do it for that long.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm already angry and exhausted. And that is one drop in the bucket of what Black and Brown people have been dealing with for hundreds of years. So I am beginning to cultivate, well, not beginning to, but it's sort of been a long time coming, just like my wish to step back in silence and, you know, see if, to see what, I don't know.
I mean, that's the wish to, I think there is something wise in the wish to step back as long as there is a desire to re-engage, because I do think that there is something valuable about let me put it this way. I don't know. I am not entirely sure. Like, the work of equity and inclusivity and diversity, like, and the discussion about race, like, I don't know how equipped the modern yoga community is to have that discussion any more than the sort of broader culture is equipped to have that discussion. And I think there is a really genuine way in which if studios and studio owners and studio like are passionate about that work, that they can begin to offer that. Where I get a little suspicious is all of the work that has been done in terms of like anti-racism and anti-capitalism and et cetera. So often what I see is we take all of this rich work and then we say, look, it's just like the yamas and the niyamas. And I'm just like, I don't know that we can like force this Patanjali merger with anti-racist work. Like, I just don't know that that's the skillful way. Like, couldn't we just say that like yoga has always adapted to the culture in which it is presented? Buddhism has already always presented in the culture in which, although there's much more precedent in Buddhism for, I think, for a tie-in to anti-racist work. And this is the cultural moment. This is the cultural issue that we're trying to come to terms with. So how do we have a discussion about it within the context of practice? And it doesn't need to perfectly fit with Patanjali. If it perfectly fits with Patanjali, great. If it perfectly fits with something in the Hatha Yoga, like, great. But
we don't have to force it.
You don't have to force it. You can just be like, if this is work that is interesting and you feel called to do it, great. If not, I hope that you feel called to do it in whatever way you can do it at some point. but I don't know. I haven't seen a presentation of it specifically in the yoga world that doesn't feel like either I get pessimistic that it's a studio doing it for marketing purposes, which is my own habit of being pessimistic, but also not entirely false.
For like the optics?
Yes. Yeah. Or I get this feeling we're trying to combine two things before we really have a depth of knowledge in either of them.
That's interesting.
Like,
yep.
The understanding of yoga philosophy and Buddhism in the West is still quite surface. And the understanding for most people of the depth of understanding of the anti-racist and abolitionist and queer liberation and like all of these movements that have been going on for much longer than you know, the last 2 years, although some people would like to think they only came up in the last 2 years. We're not at a point of, like, they can be parallel, they can inform one another, but I don't know that, like, we've figured out exactly how to integrate them.
Yeah, we don't have to fucking Pangea this. I agree with that. Because I have this impulse to do that, to make sense of things based on the structures I'm currently existing in. And this is where I bring up the fact that we have a really short attention span.
Yes.
It was not long ago we were having, you and I, but also Lord, more at large, conversations about Patabi Joyce.
Mm-hmm.
So we were having conversations about the toxicity of guru culture. We were talking about the toxicity in Iyengar.
Yeah.
The danger, the harm caused, the predatory power dynamics, the racism, the sexism, the sexual assault, like all of it was top of mind, top of tongue. I feel like I blinked my eyes and everyone was just cool with it again.
Yeah, it kind of does feel like that.
Right? So like, I say this directly to Ashtanga yoga teachers. What the fuck, man? No, you can't hide behind the practice is beautiful, but no, I don't care.
Lincoln agrees.
Lincoln's angry.
Lincoln wholeheartedly agrees. Yeah.
All right, we got to put a pause on that.
Okay.
Elizabeth, get ready to say hi. You don't have to say much except hi. Who's there?
Who's there?
There's Ryan. Hello. Hi, Ryan.
Hi.
How you doing?
Is it recording?
It is recording, yes.
Okay, I'm so sorry to cut this conversation of Unrolled short.
Am I on a video?
No, you're not on a video. Okay. You're on a recording. My genius sister is here to help me with some really urgent matters, but I do want to continue to talk about shaming Ashtangis in the future. It is my life's work.
Well,
and we will see you soon.
Yes. On that note,
bye.
Bye.